Blog Talk Radio. Oh, hey, everybody. It's April here with you. Welcome to another episode of Freaks and Geeks. If this is your first time joining us, go ahead, head to our Facebook page, give us a like, let us know what you liked about the show tonight, and you know what, if you didn't, let us know that too. We want to know everything. I am joined, as always, by my metaphysical maven, Carrie, and Sultan of Swagger, Chris.
Man, nobody makes me feel like you do.
I mean, I try real hard. You know?
Oh, yeah, she makes us all feel good.
Oh, my God. Thanks.
Well, maybe in a different way than...
She just knows how to touch the special places, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I was thinking more like loved and valued as a person, but...
Yeah, let's just go with that. Let's just go with that. Well, we have... a very exciting thing that we need to take care of. Some business that we need to take care of. First off the bat, we have a very special guest. Tonight, we are joined by Shaniqua Tucker of Purple Lotus. If you don't already know what Purple Lotus is, you definitely need to look into it.
Hi, guys. It's my first time on a show, so I feel like I'm losing my virginity, and hello all.
Don't worry, we'll be gentle. Well, hello. So, can you tell us a little bit about Purple Lotus?
Sure. So Purple Lotus is a metaphysical lifestyle brand, body care products, chakra stones, chakra jewelry. Everything is intentionally made. It's not... you know, me just going out to Michael's and just putting together stones. Every single piece of jewelry has an intention along with it. All the stones have purpose, and hopefully you guys will all get to have a chance to win a nice little care package.
Yes, absolutely. Let's go ahead and head on over to Facebook really quick, and we are going to go ahead and do the drawing for the Purple Lotus swag. So if everybody would head over there, if you're listening, we're about to do this live on Facebook. So I've got to go live first. Jeez, OP. Yeah, I know. I'm not on yet. Hold on. I'm coming. I'm coming.
This ought to be good.
Man, I...
Multitasking. Can she do it?
Oh, I can do it. Oh, I can do it.
Round two. Round one didn't go so well.
Let's see. I'm going live. Going live. I've gotta have a title, or else, you know, it's not gonna work.
So Carrie, while she does that, do you have a good week this week?
Who are you directing that towards?
You.
You.
I did.
Carrie.
All right. So we are live right now on the Book O' Face. Shaniqua, you should see it any second pop up, and I can actually see when you see it. It'll be fantabulous. But we have several. Can you guys see it? Can you guys see my artwork? Oh, you can see my shark for Shark Week. So shark for Shark Week. We have a flower, a beautiful flower. Thank you, Chris, for joining us. We have, these are not eyes. These are actually boobs.
I see it now. Yes, I see it.
Okay.
Now.
All right. Wait, we'll start over. Okay. So you've got the shark for Shark Week.
Wow.
We've got this beautiful flower. Don't you guys judge my artwork. I seriously had like 2 minutes to do this. These are boobs. I want to be real clear right now. These are boobs.
Oh,
bad boobs.
That's exactly what I thought they were. So that's exciting.
Well, good. They're not eyeballs. They're boobs. This is the sun.
Is that the sun?
This is a smiley face. Here's a heart. It's fun. Here's a moon. You can see that as I went on, I started having to come up with more and more obscure things. And here's a star. So out of those, out of all of these, would you like to pick one?
The moon looks like a banana.
What do you think?
Pick one now?
Yeah.
Shark. I like the shark.
Oh, the shark from Shark Week. Okay, let's see. Drum roll, please. Can I do this with one hand? Am I that talented? Oh, shit. Oh, it's sticky. It's so sticky. Why? Why did I seal it?
Why did you seal it? Just
going
on your boobs.
All right, let's see. All right, who are you? Stacy Trout, who was actually our guest.
Oh my gosh.
Exciting.
Woo woo. There we go. There's our winner.
Yes.
All right.
Congratulations.
Stacy. Yes.
Congratulations.
Going to get some swag. All right, guys.
Oh.
Well, I'm going to finish off this live session and rejoin the podcast. If you're tuning into this, by all means, come join us. We're going to have a good time talking about the devil. All right. Bye, guys.
So,
okay,
I don't know if you know this, but the devil took a trip to the United States one time.
Right.
Georgia.
So, we're live.
Hold on. Facebook hated me. Okay. All right. We're back. It's okay.
Oh, good.
He took a trip down to Georgia. Is that what you're saying?
Oh, yeah. And he got beat.
I just want to let you know that before this episode, I had a talk with Chris, and I was like, hey, listen. You know, we don't have a whole lot of time to be horsing around. There's a lot of content here. We need to really get on topic, and this is the response.
And here we are, seven minutes later.
And here we are. Here we are. All right,
you know
so
me,
let's,
babe.
Without further ado, let's go ahead and get into our topic tonight. Is everybody ready?
We're ready.
Primed and ready.
I'm ready.
Okay.
I've been ready to go for a while.
Ready? Okay. Well, geez. All right. Well, let's get it going then. Okay. So we are going to continue our journey into the spiritual realm tonight with a wide perspective of the devil. And what that really means is that we have examined multiple cultures, multiple religions, and we've compiled everything we could find into one document, which is what we will be reading from. Now, we had a lot of sources when we put this together. Not the least of which is the United Church of God, Britannica.com, History.com, Dictionary of Angels by Gustav Davidson, and Encyclopedia of Angels by Rosemary Ellen Guiley. Also, Baynat.org, which is an Islamic site. So we've kind of gone through a bunch of stuff. There's actually a few more, but none that we used quite as heavily as those. So
you say those stone left unturned?
Yeah. Yeah, I would. Okay. Okay, so we went ahead and we did away with our intro tonight because we have so much content. So we're just going to go ahead and skip it and dive right in.
All right, well, let's set some baseline here. First off, what is the devil? Most religions contain a being that questions why things are the way they are, who challenges the supreme power, who accuses them of hypocrisy, and who leads mankind away from cosmic ideals of subservience and acquiescence. The devil often represents the world itself. It has not appeared universally, and many cultures lack any such centralized figure of evil. Unfortunately, there's a common presumption that all of the satanic figures must indeed be the same being, despite the fact that each religion has its own very unique perspective and description of him. In those places where it did arise, there has not been a common path of development. The root of the word Satan comes from Hasatan, a Hebrew word meaning the accuser, opposer, and the adversary, or as a verb, to accuse and to oppress. Anyone can be described as Hasatan depending on their actions. Now, all of these opposing beings promote the materialism of this world,
rather than the more spiritual route of abstaining from stuff in order to obtain the next world. In other words, the primary role of Satan and his various guises in the world religion is the rejection of spiritual wishful thinking and the embrace of our present real world life.
Well, that is a thing.
Well, I guess there's one way to describe it. Well, that's a thing. Oh, yeah.
I'm
oh, man.
Not going to lie. I was doing other things during the intro. I'm sorry.
Well, good job.
Sorry.
So, so Zoroastrianism is one of the most ancient religions about which anything is known and is over 3,000 years old. It has followers, still has followers as of today. People still follow Zoroastrianism. And it arose in ancient pre-Islamic Iran in the eastern and south-central regions of the Iranian world between the great mountain ranges of Hindu Kush and Sistan, an area that today is divided between Iran and Afghanistan. And it still survives there, although it faces constant and sometimes violent persecution. It was supposedly founded by Zarathustra, also called Zoroaster. I these words.
You're doing pretty good.
Name.
Oh, he's our special hire.
I'm only here because I'm pretty and funny.
That's it. That is correct, actually. That is
the first one.
Yeah. So I just wanted to impart a little bit of a history lesson here as well. Zoroastrianism is actually practiced by the Yazidis, which the world will remember as one of the most devastated people groups during the rise of the Islamic State in Iraq. Thousands of women and children were enslaved, and many of the men were captured or killed as a sort of ethnic cleansing. If you ever get a chance to read more about the Yazidis and their rich culture, I would highly recommend it. They are a really interesting people group. I wish we could have done more to help them when they needed it most.
It's all crazy. All craziness.
It was real bad. Real bad.
So, continuing on, Zoroastrianism is in many ways monotheistic, despite common beliefs that there is a single creator god, Ahura Mazda, and this makes it a significant precursor to many of the religions that later rose in a similar vein that would include the major truly monotheistic religions, Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. But Zoroastrianism is most often called dualistic because most practices heavily involved Ahura Mazda's twin children, Spentu Manu, meaning beneficent spirit, and Angra Manu, meaning hostile spirit. The hostile spirit is better known by its Middle Persian equivalent, Aharaman. Their different temperaments arise from the choice they made between truth, Asha, and the lie, Dru. Between good thoughts, good words, and good deeds, and evil thoughts, evil words, and evil deeds. The battle between these two defined the theology of Zoroastrianism, and this dualistic idea of spiritual warfare remained the monotheistic religions to this day, especially Christianity and Islam, although the perceived balance between God and Satan is a bit different.
Yep, super different. Many
just
religions.
An ongoing war.
Yeah, there's a lot to it. Many religions, typically Eastern religions, such as Buddhism, Hinduism, assert that everyone lives through a long succession of lives and that the material world and all conscious beings are separated from nirvana. The cycle of rebirth, samsara, is a cycle of angst, pain, and delusion, and only escape from the whole system can end suffering. To escape, you need to attain enlightenment. And it is your desires, wants, and carnal side that prevents this from happening. In Buddhism, the being that represents the distractions of the real world is called Mara. The bad guys of the Buddhist and the Pali canon are dominated by the single figure of Mara, and long passages are devoted to this evil one. Reference to Mara in the Buddhist canon and its etymology identify it as with the very concept of death and life and consciousness and all other earthly things. It is the connection with death, but particularly the overcoming of death, that Mara is often mentioned in the canon. In this context, death is always regarded as an evil, the unwelcome antaka, and the ender of the existence, which is not ready to be ended. Mara represents mist and blindness and all the sensory pleasures. The full extent of Mara's power is utterly formidable to everyone except those on the verge of enlightenment, and is generally formidable even to those who have been following the Eightfold Path for some time. Put into Mara's mouth in the Kasaka Sutra, "Mine, recluse, is the eye. Mine are material shapes. Mine is the field of visual consciousness. Where can you go, recluse, to escape from me? Precisely mine, recluse, are the ear, sounds, the field of auditory consciousness, the tongue, tastes, and field of gustatory consciousness, the body, touches, the field of tactile consciousness. Precisely mine, recluse, is the mind. Mine are the mental states. Mine is the field of mental consciousness." All these claims of Mara are conceded by the Buddha. Precisely yours, malignant one, is all this. But where there is none of this, there is no coming in for you. What emerges from these definitions is a conception of the whole of samsaric existence as the realm over which Mara rules. In terms of Buddhist cosmology, this is a way of referring to the whole of life apart from nirvana. Enumerated in detail, the Satanipata, Mara's forces consist of passion, aversion, hunger and thirst, craving, sloth and torpor, fear, doubt, self-will, and various forms of self-exaltation. Prominent among these, and especially close connected with Mara, is the first, passion, also known as kama or raga.
So, in essence, if you are able to shake all of these things associated with Mara, you can achieve nirvana. Nirvana. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep, that's the idea.
You can also put up great albums.
Oh my God, Christopher. I thought we were going somewhere, and then we came right back. Okay.
Much like Buddhism, just going in circles.
Shaniqua, you wanna hit the next one?
I'm sorry, I was reading in the earlier. So there are surprisingly few references to Satan in the Bible. Some references once seen as being references are now known to be otherwise due to better translations, such as that to Lucifer, which we now know refers to an honorable dead king. Even the serpent in the story of Adam and Eve is not Satan, and is never called Satan, as the Garden of Eden was a perfect paradise and a place free of sin. So theoretically, Satan could not have been there. Satan wasn't even the name of the opposer for most of the history of Judaism. There was a being called the opposer, or the adversary. So in the book of Job, in the 4th century BCE, a being described as Satan approaches God. Satan wasn't its name. The word uses the meaning, or the word used means the opposer. It was only later that Satan became a name of a being.
So when did we get Satan? Carrie, do you know? Like, when did we start thinking that Satan was the all-powerful evil?
I think it was around the 4th century CE that Satan became the big bad.
So that was that book of Job, and that was basically when it took off as being the name of the Dark One for the rest of existence in Christianity.
If you look at the source material, it doesn't really say, it doesn't outright name, you know, the opposer as Satan, Lucifer, the devil, etc.
Seems like they just got tired of saying the opposing. It's like, we need something shorter.
Well, so like Islam, which we'll get into later, they have a different name for Satan in the beginning, but then eventually throughout the chapters, it does become this being does become Satan, kind of. Not kind of, they do. Like it is, they start calling it Satan, even though that's not the entity's actual name.
Hmm.
But we'll get into that in a little bit. We'll get into that.
So as various authors copied copies of the Hebrew scriptures, changes accumulated in the stories. Sometimes the same story appears twice. There are even two accounts of the creation that contradict one another in details. One such doubled story shows us clearly that the Old Testament God is evil, and Satan itself is not a separate being, but is actually part of God, one of the faces of God. Now, most people equate Lucifer with Satan because of the mistakes of a large number of enthusiastic Christian writers relying upon, as it were, a mistranslation and misunderstanding of a verse from the Bible. Popular poems, stories, and the film industry are all compelled towards continuing the association due to a lack of theological knowledge and academic fact-checking. Lucifer is not actually Satan. Now, not only is the association of Lucifer with Satan wrong, but it seems that it is incredibly wrong. Every indication points towards Lucifer actually being an alternative name of Jesus Christ, and Isaiah 14:13 is an honorable and mournful passage about the loss of a fallen king, not about the fall of a being called Lucifer. It kind of a big proponent of the story about the fall of an angel, the devil, however you want to call it, is
So I'm actually I have a little aside here. So fun factoid though, Lucifer actually means light bringer.
Yes.
You know, so, so that's very interesting that, I mean, I could definitely see that. I'm trying to find, I'll tell you, I dusted off my Bible from college. I was this close to being a religious studies minor, and I have probably four or five Bibles actually in this house. Christopher thought that I was going to burst into flames last week because he walked in the room and I had like a bunch of Bibles sitting out, and he's just like, what is happening here? Just feverishly paging through them. This time it was even more weird because he came home and I had the Bible open and then I had the Quran open on top of it. So
we're just going the whole scope.
Just real interesting.
The Satanic Bible.
The what?
The Satanic Bible. That's all it was missing.
I just need that now.
You need the Torah.
Too much. So I wanted to step in and tell you that I actually looked up those passages in Isaiah, and I'd actually like to read a few of them now. I think it's important to note, though, when I read this, that when they're talking about a mournful passage, it doesn't necessarily correspond to the person itself. It's not mournful about the king, but it's mournful about the fall and then the resurrection in Sheol, like using that term very loosely. So I'll read that now. So this is Isaiah 14. But the Lord will have compassion on Jacob and will again choose Israel and will set them in their own land, and aliens will join them and attach themselves to the house of Jacob, and the nations will take them and bring them to their place, and the house of Israel will possess the nations as male and female slaves in the Lord's land. They will take captive those who were their captors and rule over those who oppressed them. When the Lord has given you rest from your pain and turmoil and the hard service from which you were made to serve, you will take up this taunt against the king of Babylon, which is who we're kind of talking about here. How the oppressor has ceased, how his insolence has ceased. The Lord has broken the staff of the wicked, the scepter of rulers, that struck down the peoples in wrath with unceasing blows, that ruled the nations in anger with unrelenting persecution. The whole earth is at rest and quiet. They break forth into singing. The cypresses exult over you. The cedars of Lebanon sing. Since you were laid low, no one comes to cut us down. Sheol beneath is stirred up to meet you when you come. It arouses the shades to greet you. All who are leaders of the earth, it raises from their thrones. All who are kings of the nations, all of them will speak and will say to you, you too have become as weak as we. You have become like us. Your pomp is brought down to Sheol and the sound of your harps. Maggots are the bed beneath you and worms are your covering. How you are fallen from heaven, O day star, son of dawn. How you are cut down to the ground, you who laid the nations low. You said in your heart, I will ascend to heaven. I will raise my throne above the stars of God. I will sit on the Mount of Assembly on the heights of Zaphon. I will ascend to the tops of the clouds. I will make myself the Most High. But you are brought down to Sheol, to the depths of the pit. Those who see you will stare at you and ponder over you. Is this the man who made the earth tremble, who shook kingdoms, who made the world like a desert and overthrew its cities, who would not let his prisoners go home? All of the kings of the nations lie in glory, each in his own tomb, but you are cast out away from your grave like loathsome carrion. So
wow.
I want to say something there. There's a specific word. So I don't want to say aliens, but aliens.
I didn't even get I know I said aliens and aliens will join them. Oh man. So this, what I have here, because I have this from college again, is it's a study Bible. So it's got a lot of, marks at the bottom and stuff that tells you little stuff. So it's talking about the king of Babylon and the underworld. And it says the prose introduction identifies this as a taunt song or a mocking dirge. The king in question is unnamed and no individual known to us fits that description completely. Harsh rule inspired fear on all sides, refused to release prisoners, cut down cedars of Lebanon, killed his own people, his corpse remained unburied. So, yeah, because he is the tyrant in Sheol, that is the closest we have seen to an allegory for what the devil is supposed to be so far in this, kind of. That doesn't make any sense, the way I'm saying it. But basically, this is a very smooth introduction to a demonic entity. Does that make any sense? That still doesn't make sense. Carrie, help me. What am I trying to say here?
It makes sense. I mean, it's describing a being who oppressed millions of people. And instead of doing what he expected to do, which is rise above everybody else after he died, he gets brought low, below everybody else to be, the kingdom of, or to be the ruler of the kingdom of the damned.
Yeah. So, reading further, even it says draws on a Canaanite myth of the gods Hillel and Shahar, which is the morning star and dawn, who fall from heaven as a result of rebellion. In Christianity, the myth reemerges as the fall of Lucifer and his attendant angels. So yeah, so that is that. Yeah, what I was saying is, yep.
A lot of falling from grace in this story.
Yeah.
Yes. We've said this before and we'll probably continue saying this. Christianity is such just an amalgamation of a little bit from here, a little bit from there, take a little bit from over here,
Mix
it all together.
Boom, we've got the best religion.
Okay. Well, there's that. Okay.
So lots of symbolism to be sure. The falling star, the Greek means bringer of light, Lucifer.
Oh, dang. Well, there we go.
Lucifer.
Is it the Statue of Liberty?
It is the Statue of Liberty.
Yes. The Statue of Liberty was given to us as a Lucifer, which is funny. They don't call it that, obviously, but that's what France built it as, but
yep.
Not the demonic kind, the light bringer kind.
So the Greek means bringer of light and is the name of the planet Venus, which has long been associated with clear-mindedness and spirituality by the myths of the world.
It occurs in Buddhism in its positive and correct sense. We are told that on the night of the full moon of Vaisakh, which is the month of May, the Buddha fixed his mind on the morning star as it was rising, and the moment of full enlightenment occurred.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, there you go. In the month of May, when there's a full moon, just stand outside and bask in it. Be enlightened.
Well, it literally cast light onto everything, including that enlightenment, and that's how that occurred. Light bringer.
That's we're just bringing it all together.
I'm bringing it all together. Well, I mean, it is all together. It's the thing. The thing is that it is all together.
Yeah, everything is connected.
Exactly. And just because somebody is half a world away in Iran, that doesn't mean that the basis of our beliefs aren't the same. We may call things different things. We may have myths that are just a little bit different. But at the end of the day, it's all kind of the same.
I mean, that's in previous episodes we've done this month. That's kind of why I said like religion is more of a way, like a guide to how to live your life versus like something that needs to be followed, like step by step instructions on you do these things and you will ascend.
That's why religion changes over time. Different places, different cultures, different people to adapt to whatever the norm is.
Yeah, eventually Jesus is going to have a fucking iPhone.
Jesus is going to have an iPhone.
I think Jesus is an Android kind of guy myself.
He might be an Android kind of guy.
The eye resurrection?
Oh, Christopher.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, here we are. Here we are. Okay, so carrying on. The Islamic theology of our understanding of Satan runs like this. After creating Adam, God commands all to bow before Adam. Iblis, one of the jinn, refuses because he was made from fire, while humans are only made from clay. The argument doesn't make any sense, but rather than just re-educate Iblis and tell him to be more sensitive, that God wants to punish him for his subversion. He decides to make more useful course of action, and that is to condemn Iblis forever. Iblis asks permission to cause evil for others and lead them astray under their own self-centeredness. God agrees with this understanding that Iblis will have no power over God's servants. So, I broke out my Quran, and the text actually is a lot more sophisticated than that assessment. But I'm going to go ahead and read the actual text for you now. And this starts off in chapter 2, verse 34. And behold, we said to the angels, bow down to Adam. And they bowed down. Not so Iblis. He refused and was haughty. He was of those who reject faith. Now chapter 7, verses 11 through 13. It is we who created you and gave you shape. Then we bade the angels bow down to Adam, and they bowed down. Not so Iblis. He refused to be of those who bow down. God said, what prevented thee from bowing down when I commanded thee? He said, I am better than he. Thou didst create me from fire and him from clay. God said, get thee down from this. It is not for thee to be arrogant here. Get out, for thou art the meanest of creatures. And then 1761 through 62. Behold, we said to the angels, state unto Adam. They prostrated except for Iblis. He said, shall I prostrate to one whom thou dost create from clay? He said, seest thou, this is the one whom thou hast honored above me. If thou wilt but respite me to the day of judgment, I will surely bring his descendants under my sway, all but a few. So we can see some fundamental differences here between the devil or Satan from a Christian perspective and also the Islamic Iblis. Iblis would be Satan being cast down as one of God's angels, right? So that's exactly what it is. They're not angels necessarily. I mean, they're not really angels. They're more
so
like
between an angel.
I thought jinn were supposed to be evil spirits.
No, they're not really. So Djinn are very similar to demons in my mind. I would not consider them to be angelic necessarily. Djinn don't go out there and do nice things for people. The purpose of a Djinn is to protect certain things, certain sacred things. That can be land, that can be fire, that can be whatever. Their job is to protect. A lamp, I guess. I mean, you could. You know, I don't know. I've never heard of a lamp, Djinn, but maybe. But they're there for protection, and they're there to oversee things. So that's the purpose of a Djinn to begin with. So if this fire Djinn, who's literally fire Djinn are supposed to be very fiery, if this fire Djinn was supposed to substrate himself before a human, a mortal, I can see where he might have had a little bit of a problem with that. But regardless, that's how he was cast out of the circle. And so because of that, God said that the only way that he could convince people to veer off of God's path was through self-centeredness and man's propensity for their own selfishness. And so he has that. He has that job now to try and tempt man from the path of God.
Well,
I can
talk
about this all day, man.
Well, unfortunately, we gotta move to other religions.
No, we got a boogie, man. We got a boogie.
All right, so we've covered some of the other religions. Now, as far as some of the other, more popular religions that have. Are throughout the world. It's hard to find a comparison for Satan within Hinduism, Norse religion, Greek religions, etc., because in these polytheistic religions, many beings have good and evil sides, and there are frequently different beings representing death, hell, evil, etc., which also had positive sides. In such complicated and loose systems, it is not possible to find a being or force that represents an enemy of the entire pantheon. Sir Charles Eliot says, quote, "No sect of Hinduism personifies the evil in one figure corresponding to Satan or the Aharaman of Persia." In Germanic theology, Nidhogg is a dragon living at one of the three roots of the cosmic tree of Yggdrasil, the freezing mists and darkness of Niflheim, which was the lowest of the nine worlds, was where the dragon lived, ripping corpses apart and eating them. Between mouthfuls, he would send the squirrel Ratatastok up the cosmic tree on an errand of insult when momentarily tired of the taste of dead flesh, Nidhogg would gnaw at the root of Yggdrasil itself. Satan is also later described as a dragon by Christian authors. Hinduism did not have a single, quote-unquote, evil god or force. Nearly all the gods had died. But there is something appealing about Nidhogg. Depictions of the roots of Yggdrasil have snakes wrapped around the lowest roots, such a being feeding off of death as life feeds from its killed prey, is turned feeding Nidhogg. And this constitutes the death of the cycle of life itself. If we see that all life dies, then Nidhogg will be victorious over all life, just as Satan represents death's victory over all life. Nidhogg is not listed as an infernal name by Anton LaVey in the Satanic Bible, probably because beyond a few artistic details, there's not much that can be formed in the way of a philosophy or a principle of Nidhogg. Counting the earth as good because it supports human life, Ymir is an aspect of mythology that, like Satan, can be seen to be a mechanism by which the earth is dependent on satanic power. The earth was created because Satan wished to create a secret domain away from God in order to have power. Although Satan is evil, we consider the earth good, and without the effects of this evil force, the earth would not exist. Holy Lord, that can get confusing.
I think it's important to know that everything requires balance. I mean, that's how That's how things are supposed to function. It's like the yin and yang symbol. There's a little bit of good and a little bit of bad in each side. It's just knowing the balance. So
yeah,
that's pretty deep, though. It's pretty deep.
I think the biggest thing is, like, you can't know one without the other. Like, if you
right.
always good, like, you don't know it's good. That's just the way that it's always been.
So we are actually going to skip the Raelians and Heaven's Gate, as much as I hate to do it, and we're going to go straight
to
the next
part. Oh, no, not Heaven's Gate.
Not Heaven's Gate.
Oh, my God. We're going to go straight to the next part.
So within some theologies and theories that refer to Satan as a savior and defender or righteousness and the white light God as an evil oppressor, most common is the acceptance of Satan as a true, correct symbol used to represent crisp reality, with God as the negative symbol of delusion. Satanic religions hold to this idea even if they lack the actual belief in a real God or Satan. These are common themes in satanic music and are also present in nearly all schools of thought that are labeled as devil worship. Some ancient Gnostic religions also hold that the good-seeming God is evil, whereas there are other more obscure good forces in life. The concept of a single figure of personified evil has not appeared universally, and many cultures lack any such centralized symbol. For example, in Hinduism and in other polytheistic belief systems, there is no such single deity because all of the gods themselves have good and bad sides, which together explains the evils of life without the need for a monopolizing instigator of suffering. Likewise, in some philosophical-minded religions, such as Baha'i, Satan is denied any power or formal standing in the theology. Developed, liberal Christianity has reached the same conclusion, with bodies such as the Church of England being highly reticent to mention Satan anywhere. Aside from religious groups, the large number of atheists, humanists, and other non-religious folk around the world also, of course, lack a belief in Satan.
Satan!
Man.
I wonder, I kind of wonder if Satanism came about just like as a rebellious thing for like, you know, you had so many, like, Christianity and all that was so prevalent, like, way back in the day and stuff like that, that you just had rebellious people that were like, well, I don't want to believe that. I'm just going to believe the other side.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure that there are a lot of people that believe it just because it's edgy, you know?
Right.
Well, I mean, if you put an image of your head of what you believe, somebody like a person who is gung-ho about the Christian belief versus somebody who you envision that is a satanic worshiper, I guess, for lack of a better term. Like, in the essence of looking cool, the satanic worshiper is the one that's going to look cool and probably be more appealing to more quote-unquote hip people.
It's Satan worshiper, babe. It's just Satan worshiper. I'm a satanic worshiper.
Hey, look. Whatever.
Okay. All right.
You knew what I
meant. We are going to talk about this. Give me just 1 second to put a nice bow on all this research. In Europe, Satan was taken most seriously in the late Middle Ages and early modern period, a time in which human learning and knowledge was severely challenged by social instability and the Christian domination of education. Likewise, in other parts of the world where superstition is rife and schools are sparse, the idea of evil spirits caused much fear. Philosophical and intellectual development tend to weaken the worth of the idea of Satan, and in Christianity and Buddhism, the symbol is becoming superfluous, with the concept of evil itself being downgraded to mere human sinfulness, which is just a part of the system, and natural disasters, which is explained by science. Despite this, Satanists hold on to positive elements of the symbol, and the biggest satanic organization is the Church of Satan, which already accepts Satan as only as a metaphor and not even as a real being. So now is where the gloves come off and we finally get to talk about our own personal views on Satan.
I like Stan.
You like Stan?
Yeah. just
that's going to be a problem for our marriage. You like someone in the stand. It's going to be kind of a problem. I don't think I can compete. So Carrie and I have talked about this often. I think that Satan is, I think that all of us really are ideas. Can it be a real thing? Paranormally speaking, yeah, I mean, it could be. It's, I think it's all about intention. It's all about ideas. It's all about intention. So if you manifest something that is just absolutely dripping with evil and nastiness and, you know, full of hatred, then that could be your definition of Satan. That could be whatever. It's, I mean, what is Satan really? I think it's just a concept.
Satan is a name to put to the evil.
Yeah, and I think just like what Shaniqua said, you can't have, there's no such thing as true black. There's no such thing as true white. It doesn't exist. You're going to have that yin and yang. You're going to have everything, like even that black side of the yin and yang has a little dot of white in it. It has something redeeming about it. And even the white side has a little dot of black because you can't have one without the other.
No. And I mean, like, you also look at what some person considers evil, another person doesn't.
Yeah, true.
So, I mean, it all comes down to, seems like, perspective.
Yeah.
What do you think, Shaniqua?
So I actually talked to my husband about this. We talk about this all the time. I think everyone has good and evil within them, and you have the ability to create heaven or hell with, you know, your intentions, your mindset, your outlook. I mean, we create our own realities, and I think a lot of these religious texts said about the idea of Satan as almost if you do this, this will happen. And what bigger symbol of that than someone, you know, that is, you know, burning people and torturing people in a fiery hell. So I think, of course, it's a lot more than just intention. But I think at the core, at the most basic level, it's all a matter of your outlook and how you interpret things and the intentions that you bring about. But everyone has balance. Everyone has to have balance. So I don't know. It's a little more than that. But at the core, you know, that's how I feel about it.
I think that's so
look,
cool.
I think when you look at far as when, like, you know, the idea of Satan or whatever you wish to call it came about, I think it was born more out of trying to put instill fear in people, so that way they would more easily fall in line with the way that whatever religion wanted them to go.
Yeah, I listened
to a really good podcast on NPR the other day that was just about this, about a psychiatrist or a psychologist that is studying why religion exists. And they were looking at religions with a loving God versus religions with a wrathful God. And religions with a wrathful God, people are more apt to do charity work and other stuff like that if there are consequences. If you have a loving God that's going to forgive whatever you do, people try to get over or get by doing more things than if there's a wrathful God that knows everything and he's going to fuck you up.
Yeah.
Give people an inch, they take a mile kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Well,
I mean, think about it. It's the same thing with work. I mean, you know, April used to be my boss, and she wasn't the easiest person to work for. Yeah, but, you know, you get your job done, you make sure you do it right, and it kind of forces you to stay in line, even in your own mind, even your own quality of work, without having that tyrant of a boss. You kind of, you know, keep yourself in line. So I think that was kind of the idea with those structured religions, was if we tell them that this big, you know, man in the sky is going to strike you down and put you in hell forever, I bet you'll stay in line. So it's kind of like the same mindset.
It just comes down to human nature of, like, seeing as much. See, though, most people don't have the self-restraint to stop themselves from trying to get away with what, something like pushing the boundary, I guess, as it is.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, the flip side of that, though, is if you're only doing good because you're afraid of what will happen if you do bad, I mean, there might be just a personal morality kind of issue versus...
Well, that gets, I think that gets into a whole different discussion of is the meaning, like, do you need the meaning behind it, like, or the intent behind it? Like, if you're doing it because you are generally a good person, does that make it different than if you're doing it because you're scared you're going to go to hell?
I guess it depends.
I think it does.
If the outcome's the same.
If you're volunteering at a homeless shelter because it's what God told you to do, and if you don't, you're going to go to hell. I mean, people are still benefiting from that. So, yeah. But if somebody's doing it just because they feel like they want to, it you know.
I think the difference is how I'm going to feel inside. If I'm doing it, I'm going to feel a lot better.
I think the intention is really key there. I mean, I don't think you get a pass if you are doing something good because you have been made to do it. Now, I think that if you are made to do something good, like if Shaniqua and I got called up, we were in the guard, we got called up to go hand out disaster supplies, we probably would bitch and moan about going, but that doesn't mean we don't want to be there. You know what I mean? Like,
absolutely.
I think intention has everything to do with it.
Yeah. And it's all a matter of perspective of what moral is, because a lot of people say, well, that person did this and they're bad. They should go to hell, or, you know, Satan has them, or whatever the case may be. But what if they don't believe that what they're doing is bad? You know, their intention could be, I'm protecting myself, I'm doing this out of protection. It's all a gray area of really understanding the core reasons for people's actions and thought processes.
I stole this food because I need food. I have no food.
I mean, to me, that's a valid, like, that would be valid. Like, okay, I can take the food, you know?
Like, there's so much, like, as far as, like, just little itty-bitty details and everything that make it to where nothing can be inherently evil from every side.
Yeah, for sure. I was actually having, I don't want to say an argument. It was not an argument. It was more like just a fun little jaunt on the Facebooks the other day. And there was this picture that one of the other hosts had posted, and it was a political post. I'm going to tell you right now, it was a political post. And it was Michelle Obama, and it was Pat Robertson talking about Michelle Obama bearing her arms. And, you know, like in a dress, it was a sleeveless dress. And he was like, this is an abomination. This is immoral. Like this is no look for a first lady and stuff like that. And then below it was a picture of Melania. And I'm sure you can guess what kind of picture it was of Melania. And it was a quote of Pat Roberts. Yes. A very exotic picture of Melania. And beside that was a quote from Pat Robertson talking about how wonderful Melania is and how she is the best first lady, or, you know, whatever. And it's like there are all these people below talking about how immoral Melania Trump is for that photo shoot. I mean, I won't make any other judgments other than just the photo shoot. That's literally all I'm talking about. But, like, I'm looking at it and I'm like, is it, though?
No.
I mean, if it's her choice, she wasn't forced to pose against her will.
First lady, she had no idea.
And plus, we were born naked. I feel like if God really wanted us to be all clothed up, then maybe we wouldn't be born naked. Like,
he gave you leaves. He gave you fig leaves. And in the case of Adam, he gave him a pine needle.
Well, actually, they didn't cover themselves until after they ate the fruit of knowledge.
Right, exactly. Boom.
Ate the fruit of knowledge and said, oh God, I need to cover myself.
Yeah, exactly.
Adam just looked at me and he's like, what is that thing?
He's just slapping it to see what happens.
Let's hope not.
I can't
let.
And lo, and God said, "Stop doing that. You're making me cry."
Stop doing that. You'll go blonde.
Oh, yes. Political posts on Facebook are never good.
Yeah, they never end well.
No, I just
people
gotta
try to put their own beliefs and their own fears and insecurities off on other people. Like, I'm ashamed to be naked, and I don't want to see anyone else do it and be comfortable about it. Honestly, like you said, we were all born that way. You know, it's the most natural thing in human nature. I don't understand how people can. I don't know.
It's
yeah.
just the stigma of being like, if you're naked, then it has something to do with you being like a promiscuous person, and or like it has to go around with probably like age old like cultural norms of it's shameful to, you know, not walk around clothed.
But it's not hurting anyone. You know what I mean?
Like, no, it's not hurting. I mean, I get excited.
Okay. Well, that's all for tonight, folks.
We're becoming nudists.
No, I think that's just you, bud. I won't tell you that I'm wearing pants right now, but I will tell you that I put makeup on.
It's actually acceptable to not have to wear clothes.
I can't. I just want to not be able to wear. I want to not have to wear a bra. That's all I want.
Yes. Hashtag release the tatas.
Let me tell you a secret. You don't have to.
Oh, no, I do, man. I'll kill somebody with these things. Sling them around, taking out people's eyes, all sorts of stuff.
I've already had to go to the doctor multiple times.
Oh, my God.
We have fun.
Hospital bed right now.
Yeah.
It's Dude, not a good look.
Guys.
If I don't wear a bra, I look like the kind of woman that belongs at a Golden Corral at 10:30 on a Sunday.
Oh,
awesome with grandma with your pants all the way up.
Yeah, that's exactly what I look like in my life. I'm not afraid to admit it.
Did you hear the pastor? Oh, he was so good.
Judy, go give me one of them carts.
Oh, you need
this
a motor.
A great show, guys.
Golden Corral.
Awesome.
You've reached a new low.
Thank you. This is, we went from the devil to Golden Corral. I don't know what the difference is, but it's fine.
I think Satan makes some of those meals, that's for sure.
Yeah, about 30 minutes after you eat at Golden Corral, it feels like you're possessed.
Satan's coming out of your butthole.
What was that? Carrie, what was the, was it Golgothan shit demon?
Yes, the Golgothan shit demon. Well, just next week's episode.
Yeah. All right. Well, we do have like 2 minutes left, so we do have to go. One last plug. Sheik, you want to make one last plug for Purple Lotus?
Yes. Soap, Florida water, sage, smudge sticks, anything you need to cleanse your house, cleanse your body, cleanse your mind, all types of stones, curated and handcrafted by me. Definitely support Purple Lotus.
Yes, for sure. And I definitely need some help cleansing my husband, at least. I need to get him cleansed, exercised, a whole nine. So we got to work on that. But great show, guys. Thank you so much for being here.
Yeah,
Shaniqua, it was fantastic. Thank you for the giveaway, and I need to settle up with you right after this. So
sounds good.
All right,
thank you guys.
Guys
for having me. This was awesome.
Oh, it was a fun time.
Thank you.
All right. We'll see everybody next week. Have a good week.
Bye.
Peace out, everybody.